I am your host, Stephanie Contouris, along with me, David Willingham and Tim Johnson, and we have a show for you tonight. There's so much to talk about. Sanctuary City, the fine for the Chaler Mailer, the veto in the county, and we're going to start with a couple of news updates. Our electors vote on December 19th. That's still 12 days away, but it's not soon enough for Bellingham because Bellingham's already talking about 2017. In that, Amy Glasser has declared for County Council District 2, and Washington Won't Discriminate posted a message about a pre-filing bill for another anti-trans restroom bill that they will, I think, for a pre-file, they have to file again when the legislature's in session? I don't know. So they don't have a number yet, as far as I know, but that's something that it's obviously going to be hot again. And then Amy Glasser's filing, or she will file for the new District 2?
Correct. Under the 5-district redistricting that happened last year.
And catch us up a little bit. There was the special committee.
Well, I think District 2 is South Bellingham, and so okay. She's filed for that. And these districts are restricted by district only, so only people in the district are going to be able to vote for these particular candidates for office.
Wow. And this, just to touch on briefly, there was that whole conversation with the county, and there was a commission, and then the council, and a lot of brouhaha on both sides of the issue.
Correct.
And that's what we've come down to.
Correct.
And this is one of how many new districts?
Well, she stepped up early on in this new district. There are 5 districts. There is a South Bellingham, North Bellingham. There's a coastal district that includes Ferndale and Blaine and the cities to the west. There's a big central farming district, and then there is the other district that includes the foothills and Glacier and the rural county.
So, Dave, I remember us talking about this last year, and in some ways multiple districts is a good thing.
You get a better distribution, in theory, of viewpoints, and people get better representation. It's probably better for people who live in areas like the foothills to have district only, because that's how they're going to get a candidate up there. So I think it's going to be a overall positive change. All of the changes once they're all enacted.
Well, the central farming district has always wanted to have somebody on the council that is directly interested in agriculture and agribusiness, those
only,
things.
They
have been clamoring for this for years, and they're going to get this. It's going to be very interesting. But what I think is interesting about the combination of new districts and district only is that the people in their district are answerable only to the people in their district, and that means you're going to get somebody completely crazy on the right in the conservative districts.
Anyway,
you're going to get somebody completely crazy on the left in some of the most liberal districts in Whatcom County, which is South Bellingham. And I'm not saying that about Amy at all. That's
not my comment. Not to demean anybody who may have stepped
no.
up so early.
My comment, she is appears to me to be an extremely level-headed person, but because there are no checks from any of the other districts, these people can represent their districts ferociously.
And it'll be quite the roller coaster on the council, I imagine.
I think it's going to be fun, and I'm very happy, not so much with district only, because ultimately I believe that these people come together as a body of 7. And they are spending our tax dollars in a cohesive way. So I actually think that ultimately they need to come together. But if we have district only, I think the new districts are a much fairer distribution, and it's going to make for a very rowdy county council.
What do you think, Dave?
I agree, and I'm actually looking forward to the new council. There's going to be a lot more opportunity for excitement and drama with it, and I think it's going to be overall more fun.
And at the very least, if it's more exciting, and even if people are representing more extreme viewpoints, if my 2 cents is, if it gets more of our county citizenry involved when it's not an election period, that they actually pay attention and they give feedback to the representatives, then that makes for a more vibrant and healthy community.
And I honor Amy for stepping up early, because it takes, I have to say that it takes a lot of courage to step up and run for public office, put yourself out there. She's done it early. I think that's actually could be smart for her, because it might calm a lot of people. It's like, oh, golly, she's so great that I don't have to run myself, and I can get behind her. She can do her fundraising early. So I don't think it's a deficit for her to step in early on this. I believe it's going to be a pretty contentious race for county council next year. There's lots of things in ferment that we could talk about in future shows, but she's the first, and she's the first to step into running for county council under her district.
And I will say a shout out to the progressives as well, because Amy Glasser was a very strong and loud Bernie supporter, and she was a delegate for Bernie, and she has already put up a website, a lot of enviro points, like she's really running on an environmental platform. And we'll have more to say about her and other candidates, and we can just hope that the anti-trans bathroom bill dies a quick unsignature-filled death. But let's turn to city council, because there was another strong public weigh-in about Sanctuary City. And I understand at the last city council, there were viewpoints on both sides. People spoke out strongly in favor and strongly opposed. Well, what happened this week was about 20 to 25 people spoke, led by the Blue Group, which is Western Washington University's group of, it's an AS student group of undocumented students. And they were the first people to speak and really led that wave, and really powerful, passionate young people that really brought it. And I want to also give a shout out, because a lot of professors from Whatcom Community College and a lot of people from Western Washington University as well, not one speaker against this week.
I thought it was a great turnout. It's nice to see packed council meetings. You know, they not a lot of people stayed past the public comment
yes,
period.
Yes, I was going to say that the council did. Pinky sort of bemoaned the fact that, oh, after the public comment period was open, nobody wanted to hear about the budget details. Maybe they should put the public comments at the end. But, I totally agree with you. But this isn't our first go at a sanctuary city.
No, it isn't. And I guess the comment I would make is I have to say I was shocked. That after what we might call the Yik Yak incident at Western Washington University, where students had gotten involved in some very aggressive speech, you might even call it hate speech, the university stepped back and said, we're going to address this issue and we're going to create a safe space for these issues. But in all of that time, the university still does not have a policy about harassment, about people's fears, about being persecuted, about creating a safe space so students can express their beliefs and not suffer repercussion. And it's shocking to me that in all that time and all that ferment and people being prosecuted over the Yik Yak incident, that they never actually came up with a policy. And so I think what Western students are wanting is they want a safe space.
Yep.
They are in an academic environment. They're exploring ideas. They come from all over the world, and it's great that Western has that reputation as being a safe space where students can come. It's great that they're seeking a policy, because a policy does not exist.
Absolutely. And regardless, and I think the word that I have heard from Western, I completely agree with you, it's very frustrating. And then it's frustrating because there's also been anti-Semitic attacks that have been confirmed, but they have not been publicized by students who have come, and there's been photographs and there's been some documentation that there's an anti-Semitic task force working to develop a similar policy. And I think that's absolutely true. The impression I've gotten from Western people is that they want to be really careful, and they're I'm not at all defending them because it's frustrating to me, but they want to be really careful because look at what's happened in universities across the country. There's freedom of speech issues on one extreme, and there's hate speech on another extreme.
Well, it's a very, very difficult thing to balance. It's something that Western society has been grappling with for a couple hundred years now. It's the what constitutes yelling fire in a crowded theater is hard. It's not something that's easy to pin down. And we've seen a lot of veering, though, off to extremes. You know, people demanding that support for Donald Trump be silenced and...
Or Bill Maher not be allowed to speak, regardless of how you feel, or specifically because of how you might feel about his stance on Muslims or how problematic that is, rather than encouraging discourse, then it seems like on a lot of campuses, the current move is let's not have them speak at all. And maybe that does shut down discourse. And I think we need to have a whole show about it. In the meantime, so I think it's absolutely right. Well, if students are on Western campus, regardless of a policy there, students get to leave Western campus, and not all undocumented people in our community are students.
Correct. And there is a history to this, and that is that back in 2009, there was an initiative in the city to discuss the idea of a sanctuary city for people who were opposing the war or the military actions in the Middle East, and create a place where those people would not be hunted down by federal authority. There was a very robust discussion about that. The city at that time decided they weren't going to go down that, but they did set up some interesting policies that are sort of universally embraced by both Bellingham City Police and the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office, which is they're not going to use their resources to pursue federal mandates regarding immigration, regarding people's religious affiliations. They're pretty fiercely adamant that they have other things to do with their time.
And Mayor Linville issued a statement right after the election, and the Bellingham Police Department issued a statement. So the question I have is, and I'm absolutely in favor of us being a sanctuary city, but what would be the difference in effect between what we have now?
I don't think there is any difference. I think that there's good policy in place, and law enforcement have sort of stepped up. They have pretty busy jobs as it is without stepping up to new federal mandates to chase people down based upon their beliefs or their affiliations.
The only real difference that I see is that it's a symbolic thing. We could be the 40th city in the country to officially declare.
Yeah, there's 39 in San Francisco just went through that process.
And, you know, this is also a big issue for certain people in this country. It's something Donald Trump has promised on day one he's going to ban sanctuary cities. The right wing.
Can he do that?
No. the right wing news sites. You'll see articles. There are now thousands of sanctuary cities in this country. There's a couple of immigration-focused think tanks that say that there are, you know, whole states that are now sanctuary, which is not entirely true. But it's symbolically putting Bellingham into a certain camp.
Right. And that's really an unfortunate term.
That's an unfortunate term.
But putting that aside, Tim, I hear what you're saying, that in effect, it's a lot like when people said, oh, well, we don't need to have gay marriage because you have domestic partnership and all the laws. And okay, forget that. The symbol of being married is strong enough. And I agree that the symbol of being a sanctuary city is something that maybe it doesn't turn into a specific law or lack of law, but it's taking a stand at a time when people really need that.
Well, I agree with that, but the caution I give is that Western made a lot of very bold statements about how they would not tolerate hate speech, et cetera, following the Yik Yak incident, and absolutely nothing happened on the ground that was a real thing. And so I fear that you make a symbolic statement and then you don't follow through on it. The interesting thing that's going on right now is both the university and the city of Bellingham together are trying to figure out ways that people can report in a very private, quiet way, incidents of hate and attack that happened to them that will be responded to. And Western is trying to figure out what department, what agency on campus students should be directed to make complaints if they are targeted. City of Bellingham's trying to come up with some kind of internal policy where when these things happen, who do we send them to? Because there's really, I mean, if it's not a crime, it's not a direct crime, the police can't be involved. If it's not, then you have your 911.
If it's hate graffiti.
And you have 911 dispatch, but what does 911 dispatch do when they get a call that somebody's being harassed? So I hope that what they, I agree, it's great to be, to make symbolic statements, but it's also great to have on the ground real effective policy that is responsive to what's actually happening in the world.
So I didn't hear the city council say anything about, in any response about being willing to take it up again. So does that mean that the people who really care about this should be getting signatures? I mean, where do people go from here?
Well, I think where city council is at is they have a memory of what happened in 2009, and that ended up being a lightning rod for people from every segment and spectrum of opinion to show up, to send down on them, scream at them, yell at them, et cetera, et cetera. I think that they would rather deal with this in a methodical way. That doesn't mean that they people shouldn't encourage them and support them and urge them to move quickly and effectively on these issues.
Right.
I just think that there is a fear among them that this would become another referendum on the November election, and I don't think they want that.
COB.org is how you get in touch with your city council people, and we have to move on because we just don't have enough time in a half hour. So let's touch briefly on the amazing news from the Army Corps of Engineers that maybe is DAPL over. No, where are we now, Dave?
It's over with an asterisk. It's over for now. I don't think that anyone on any side thinks that this is the final word on it. I think that it's a strong statement that if you have something you want to get accomplished, you need to get a couple thousand veterans to show up there with you.
That was so powerful that really touched me. If you haven't seen the veterans speaking at Standing Rock, and I found out that the person who spoke, who led the veterans, was Wesley Clark's son, I think. So yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent way to describe it. It's a victory with an asterisk. I saw a political cartoon. It was based on the rock, scissor, paper thing that people do, and it said, one of them was Standing Rock Rock, which is the activists, Standing Rock Paper, which is the Army Corps of Engineer decision, and then there's Standing Rock Scissors, which is what could actually happen in a new administration
right.
to that document that could blow it up, and we're right back where we were before.
Right, and I'm not holding my breath, unfortunately. So we have to stay strong, but it was a celebratory moment.
It was, and interestingly, over the weekend, Lummi Nation had a celebration out at the tribe. They served treaty protected seafood and there were lots of tribal people from all over, and they honored the people that have been involved. Colonel Buck at the Army Corps of Engineers. They honor people that have been involved in protecting indigenous rights, and it was very exciting, and it was heartwarming.
That's great, and shout out to our friend Freddie Lane, who organized that event. So let's get back to local news, and there was an issue some of us were very angry about. previously about a jailer mailer. And who wants to give a quick recap about what happened with the jailer mailer?
Well,
why was it a big deal?
This was a promotional piece that came out in advance of the city's jail initiative. It's interesting to me, people that were clueless or people that actually thought that they were sort of in favor of a jail, this mailer came and it's like they were like, huh. But people that were actually opposed to the jail initiative, when this landed in their mailbox, they were outraged because it appeared that the county was taking a very proactive role in promoting the jail through this mailer.
And let's be clear, the mailer came officially from the county.
Correct.
It was not from a PAC.
Correct.
It was not from any kind of
it was
officially paid for and mailed by the county.
Right. Now, state law does not allow the use of public facilities or public officials to promote or oppose an initiative. When school districts send out information about a school levy, they declare where the money's going to be spent, what the millage rate is on the which is kind of dry, but the millage rate is on the
we'll
levy.
We'll do a whole show on millage rate, but not soon.
What's planned, what the issues are, what the options. They're informational mailers, and they're permitted to do that. And they're also permitted a certain latitude in presenting that information in positive ways in support of a levy. The problem with the jail mailer was it presented one particular scenario for the jail. It failed to mention that the city of Bellingham wasn't on board for that scenario. And city of Bellingham at 38% of county voters is a fairly significant chunk of people who were not on board with this sales tax
so
initiative.
So it's fair to say this wasn't even close to an objective mailer.
No, I don't think it was. There were several complaints that people made in relation to it. One of them was that it had pictures of people who were up for election, including the county executive and the sheriff.
In that cycle,
prosecutor. And it showed these fairly horrific pictures of people suffering in jail, so it was kind of manipulative in that sense. But what the Public Disclosure Commission in Olympia found was that they had improperly used mailing lists because it wasn't sent out generally to all people in the county. It was only sent out to a targeted voting list.
Okay.
That's a no-no. You can't do that. And then the other thing that they found was that it had improperly presented this one particular.
Yeah.
Well, it misrepresented the fact that Bellingham wasn't on board. It tended to suggest that everybody was had done a kumbaya about this. They hadn't. And if in fact the city of Bellingham wasn't on board with the jail that would have been built would have been much smaller. And
hold up, Dave. When somebody's running, like the sheriff or Jack Louse, and they are a candidate, how can they even be on a mailer for another issue at the same time?
Sure, but you really want to avoid any appearance of impropriety, which they didn't even bother with this. The aggravating thing to me about this is they could have done it legit. They could have set up a group, Whatcom County, for this ridiculous jail, and they could have sent out the mailers through the group, and they would have been fine. But they wanted either to do it the quickest and laziest way, or they just didn't care.
Or they didn't think anybody would catch them because they forget that people like our friend
right.
Elizabeth exist in the
That's
county.
That's right.
Doug Starcher. Yeah.
The PDC found that there was not merit to the particular of candidates appearing in the mailer. They did find they had a lot of concern about a public disclosure that revealed that there had been a lot of coordination between a consultant, DLR group, who was managing the campaign and county people who were – I mean, this was a political mailer, and it violated the spirit and intent of the Washington Administrative Code that that basically says you're able to provide the public information about initiatives, but you're not supposed to twist their arm about it.
So we're getting a little bit in the weeds, those of us who are wonky. And so for the average voter, why does this make a difference?
Well, it's your money and the people you're paying's time who aren't being really straight with you, and that's what their job is. That's what they're there to do. They can advocate all they want, but on their time.
And then not only did they get fined, how much did they get fined for?
Well, anytime it's a PDC fine, it's generally a pretty small fine. Right. And what they found was that three public officials were brought into this, the sheriff, the county executive, the prosecutor. Only the county executive as the administrator of county administration actually named in the thing. But, I think the state has an interest in making sure that the 39 other counties, 38 other counties, right. don't pull shenanigans like this in the future.
And,
so
and
I think
to be
that's
fair,
what it really
we have a Washington State has a strict public disclosure campaign, which is more.
We're lucky.
Yeah,
we're lucky.
We are lucky, and I do want to just give a quick coda that it went down anyway. So.
Right.
FYI.
Right.
So we just have about 5 minutes left, and we want to get to the update on the veto. So last week, Laos had proposed his budget, got a little tweaked, got passed by the county, vetoed it. So what happened this week?
Well, it was a very rowdy special session at county council yesterday afternoon, on Tuesday afternoon, and they were furious because the executive had gone out to media. I received a press release, KGMI, where he was objecting to certain earmarks in a proposed tax increase. Well, they had never assigned earmarks to this at all. It was not part of what they were doing. They were trying to address a general deficit in the county's budget on biennial budget of about $2 million. So it's like, well, if we're going to be $2 million behind, maybe we should bump up taxes a little bit, or we can cut. But we've been told not to cut. We're
right.
And so they were furious that this thing that they had tried to do was specifically politicized about the Cherry Point fossil fuel export ban by the county executive. So they were put into an
which was
interesting,
his claim for not
correct.
For vetoing.
And it was an interesting Gordian knot. In fact, it was a perilous moment because if they don't get something assigned by December 15th, their ability to collect property tax in 2017 is zero. They can collect no tax. And so that's this imperil.
A lot of county programs.
It's a tremendous. Yeah. It was a tremendous risk that the county executive took, that they would be able to cut his Gordian knot in a session.
Mm-hmm.
So what they decided to do, what they essentially did was they chose not to override his veto. So there will be no property tax increase for Whatcom County, which is fine.
Which is kind of calling his bluff, because you had surmised that he was going to veto and they'd override it and he'd get to look good with his supporters.
Correct.
And so they called
his bluff. Yeah, I predicted last week that what would happen is that they would decline to override, but the passage of an emergency services levy in November gave them a certain flex, a certain ability to be to have access to funds, and so they wouldn't have to basically go to the wall with the executive on this, and that's what happened. But they were angry because he had politicized in an improper way what they were trying to do. Now everybody wins because property taxes weren't raised. The executive won, and
I
think the county
loses.
The county council. Well, actually, if you don't need to raise property taxes, you shouldn't raise them. And I think that the county council was okay with just letting the executive's veto ride, because the only reason they put forward the property tax increase in the first place was to address the growing deficit in the county budget.
Last word, Dave. We've got about 30 seconds.
I'm sincerely looking forward to what is promising to be a fascinating and combative 2017 within the county council and the executive, and maybe the city will step it up a little bit.
So if the Mariners and the Hawks are not giving you this sports excitement that you need next year, you got something else to tune into.
That's
and
right.
It's more important for you. Well, I have a quick shout out, because our last thing is that Bellingham has a flag. Now, it's an unofficial flag, but the city council officially adopted unofficially the flag. And so shout out to Bradley Lockhart, whose flag is now everywhere. I think they needed to get approval from the Lummi Nation before it is officially unofficial. So that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. You have been listening to Cascadia News Now, and Dave Willingham, Tim Johnson, and I'm Stephanie Contouris. A special shout out to our engineer, Brooks Collins, with help from Robert and Suzanne tonight. And you are listening to Cascadia News Now on KMRE Bellingham, KMRE ORG, and 102.3 FM.